Good evening and welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule, and tonight we are very privileged to have with us two fabric artists, Leslie Kay and Lorraine Roy. Leslie Deanne Haig Kay was born in CFB Shiloh, Manitoba, and has lived in Halifax, CFB Kingston, CFB Petawawa, Vancouver, Saltfleet, Deep River, Ottawa, back to Kingston to go to Queen's University, Niagara Falls, Burlington, and Hamilton. Obviously, she says, I was an army brat. She studied painting at the Vancouver School of Art on weekends as a teenager. She has a degree in sociology with a minor in drama. And she's participated widely in exhibitions at art galleries and fundraisers. Leslie Kay's work is currently on exhibition in the atrium of McMaster Innovation Park. The exhibition, called Artists in the Workplace, runs through July. Lorraine Roy earned her honors BSc with an agriculture major in ornamental horticulture from the University of Guelph. Her fabric art has been characterized as a fantastic melding of biological accuracy, eye for color play, graphic design, and expertise in quilting. To see this work is an uplifting and spiritually liberating experience. Her work has been shown and or collected all over North America and beyond. It has the quality of paintings, sometimes landscapes, sometimes abstract designs. Lorraine Roy's work has also been widely exhibited. Upcoming opportunities to see her work include the Toronto Outdoor Art Exhibition in Nathan Phillips Square, July 9th to the 11th, and the Dundas Studio Tour, October 2nd and 3rd. And you can go to her website, which is www.elroytextileart.com for details. Welcome to Art Waves, Leslie Kay and Lorraine Roy.
Hi.
Hello.
Really pleased to have two such renowned local fabric artists on the program. We haven't had any fabric artists on Art Waves before, so this will be fun. I'd like to begin with a definition of fabric art. Lorraine, let's start with you. What are the boundaries?
Well, more and more there are fewer and fewer boundaries. Fabric art is starting to mix up with a whole bunch of other kinds of techniques and materials. I'm trying to think. I suppose mainly they're pieces that use fabric and threads and are put together in those kinds of techniques, and yet I've seen works called textile art that are made with wires and sticks and branches and all kinds of other materials because they use the techniques that textile artists use. So that's a good question and an ongoing discussion among lots of artists.
Yeah. Do you have a definition for fabric art per se? You said it uses fabric as its basis. Is that?
You know, the definition is moving as we speak.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a particular definition. Maybe Leslie does, but I can't think of anything.
Leslie, do you have any thoughts about definitions or boundaries of fabric art?
Well, I've always called it fiber art.
Oh, okay.
Rather than fabric art. And I think that makes it broader because anything you can thread, basically. Because I use wire, I use metallic threads, I've used dead roses. I don't think there are any boundaries. As long as somewhere there are threads holding things together.
Okay, well, obviously it grew out of the brilliant art of quilting, I would think. No?
There is definitely huge quilting influence in textile art, but there's also embroidery.
Felting? Felting is...
Yeah, felting.
Yeah, felting, the making of clothing. There are lots of different directions that textile arts come from, and the fact that there are so many textile artists whose work is so widely different attests to the fact that it comes from so many different places.
Yeah. Including your two bodies of work.
That's
both,
for sure.
Both
yeah.
Very different, and we'll get into that as well. I'd like to know how you began working with fabric or fiber. How did your artwork begin? Either one.
Mine, I don't think I've ever not worked with fabric. My mother taught me to sew when I was about 6 years old. And that was clothing making, of course, but she was a knitter. We used to crochet, we made rugs, we made all kinds of things. So I'm trying to think back of a time when I wasn't doing something with fabric with my hands, and I can't think of any, actually.
And it was something that you immediately took to you, found this was a love from the beginning.
Yeah, I was like a duck in water as soon as I started. My mother had a box of remnant fabrics that she kept underneath her sewing machine. And even before I could sew, I was playing in that box and wrapping my dolls with it, just thinking of all kinds of creative things to do with those little bits of fabric.
And isn't they were that
so beautiful.
And through school, I guess you loved home ec class, and did you take art class? No?
We didn't have home ec at our school. We did have 4-H.
Oh, great.
I learned a little bit more about sewing at 4-H. Our school was very small. I was in a little village, and we didn't have home ec. And even in high school, I suppose there was home ec, but I didn't take it. Maybe I wasn't really interested in the domestic side of things. It was more, I was always taking art classes.
Okay, that makes sense to me. But now what I found interesting, Lorraine Roy, is that you got your honors BS with an agriculture major in ornamental horticulture. What does that mean exactly?
I grew up on a farm, and I loved being outside, and I loved working with plants and being on the soil and nature. So I guess, and nobody in my family had ever done anything about art before, so I didn't really have any models to work from. Not that that was a negative thing. I decided that because I liked nature so much and I loved the sciences and I loved math and I loved practically everything, that if I took something like ornamental horticulture, it would bring together art, nature, science, all the things that I loved. And it was true.
Well, what does ornamental horticulture mean exactly? I'm picturing like hedges clipped into the shape of a giraffe or something.
Yeah, that's the creative side of it. Yeah, I've seen that done. It's about flowers too. Ornamental horticulture covers everything that's done with plants, making the world more beautiful. So that was what that was about. Mm-hmm. And I specialized while I was at university in native plants for use in horticulture. So that is something that I'm bringing into my work now also.
Okay, well, we'll get back to that. That's so interesting. Okay, Leslie Kay, let's find out how you began working with fibers and fabrics and so on.
I'm trying to remember. I was also taught how to sew when I was about 6, and my father taught me how to knit.
Oh, your father?
He learned how to knit to help, because he was an officer, to help his injured men during World War II. If they injured their hands, knitting was a therapeutic technique.
Oh.
And so he'd picked up knitting. My mother hates knitting. My father was pretty good at it. So I've been sewing and knitting since I was little. I made my own clothes. I made my brother's clothes sometimes, if they would allow me. I took painting. And then I stopped. I painted on and off, but then I got into design, like designing buildings and kids' equipment on the playground and things like that. And so I came to Mohawk for a year and took drafting and techniques. Yeah, and but I can't remember when it slid from paint to fabric.
I honestly
do not remember.
Well, that's interesting that you don't remember, but you did your degree in sociology with a minor in drama. So again, you know, it seems like a stretch.
Yeah. Originally I was going to go into medicine. I was going to be a psychiatrist, and I thought, who are you kidding? You know? I said, you know, that was then, and this is now. Get over it. I do. It really wouldn't work. And because I took all sciences. I took chemistry, physics, biology, and math, and then went to Queens and thought, what the heck? You know, what do I do now? And I took drama because I had never, ever, ever done it before. And I took sociology because the study of the behavior of people in groups interested me as an introvert because I'm watching people rather than interacting with them most of the time. So I was a born observer. And I'd never, I mean, the school that I went to was in a nuclear research center. You didn't do psychology. You didn't do sociology. You certainly didn't do drama. You didn't do art. You did the sciences and you went off and became a lab technician or an engineer, which is what my father wanted me to be. But it was just a complete break from anything I'd ever done before, except I did happen to go and study painting on the weekends and when mm-hmm. I lived as a teenager in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And
well, you obviously really were drawn to work with your hands always.
I have always worked with my hands, mechanical stuff too.
Well, so interesting. We really should hypnotize you and take you back to that moment when you first began to work with the fibers.
Yeah.
I want you to look at the microphone.
Really, I could not remember. You know,
well, it's interesting that you can't remember to me because you really have run with this. I mean, it really is how I think of you. This is key to your life now.
When I was first married, which is almost 38 years ago, I was in a show in an art gallery in Niagara Falls, and it was a combination of wrappings and mm-hmm. and mostly working with wool and those kind of fibers then. And the quilting came a little bit later, but I don't know why. I mean, I've never taken a quilting lesson. I've never...
That amazes me. Have you had quilting lessons, Lorraine?
No, I cannot make a proper quilt to save my life.
You're kidding.
Yeah,
oh, girl.
Those people who turn them over and look at them from the back and go, oh, my God, don't do that.
So not me.
Well, that is amazing to hear you say that because, honestly, both of you work with quilt stitching, what looks to me like quilt stitching, very mm-hmm. fine stitching to create exactly what patterns you want. Both of your work is two-dimensional, bordering on three-dimensional. Both of you kind of flirt with three-dimensionality, at least to my eye, and you guys can argue with me after I finish talking. I would say that color is the main difference between your two bodies of work. What do you think? I mean, I think, Lorraine, you use a lot more color in your work, and one of the most arresting things about Leslie's work is that it is black on black often, or dark blue on dark blue.
I have done completely black pieces, yeah.
Yeah, so the stitching is really what you see.
Yeah,
you know?
The texture is everything in that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So let's just go to that for a second. Talk to me a little bit about black on black. Why? What is it about not choosing color as a defining factor?
Black is so, well, in Eastern, in Japanese culture and Chinese culture, black is actually the color of life and white is the color of death because black absorbs all the other colors into itself and so it contains everything rather than in the West where it contains nothing. And so to me, black is the richest color. I know it's technically not a color, but but I just love the fact that it's so intense. And then when I stitch it, because I use a glossy surface, mm-hmm. when I stitch it, the stitching just pulls the texture out of the fabric. So
the stitching pulls the texture
out
of the fabric.
I don't doodle and I don't draw in advance. I sort of have an idea and I put the cloth out on the floor and I walk around it and I may leave it there for days just sitting there. And then when I start to stitch, whatever is back in the back of my mind is pulled out by the stitches. How they go becomes the piece. And there are times when I've heard writers talking about, I had no idea who this character was, and it just wrote it. You know, the character wrote itself. Well, I find the pieces write themselves often. I start, sit down at my sewing machine, and start stitching, and eventually I know what the piece will look like.
What it's going to be. Well, that's so interesting. It reminds me of a movie I saw once about Michelangelo talking about the Carrara marble and how, you know, the marble would tell him what figure was in it to be released. He thought of it as releasing the figure from the stone. Mm-hmm. And this sounds like the same kind of idea.
Yeah. It's just my preconception of the piece is really, really vague. Sometimes I think, like, I'll dream it or something. Hmm. And then I'll be afraid that I've lost it in the morning when I wake up. And so I'll just start and see if I can haul it back again.
Fascinating. And does sometimes a piece of material just seem right?
Well, I'll start some way and it's just that's not happening. And then it's pushing me in a different direction. So, you know, particularly with the way the my technique, because I'm drawing cords through two layers of fabric so that the cords will pull on the tube that I've created, and they'll bend one way or the other, and that will also dictate what happens when it's finished.
So. Wow, interesting. Now, before we go over to Lorraine on this topic of color and not color and inspiration and, you know, the process of the work, really just rolled everything together here. I do want to touch on the fact that I know that you have a brother who is colorblind and who is an artist as well. And I've seen his work, and it's remarkable for its textured approach. To me, to be an artist is to be all about color. And yet here you've proven this totally wrong. How much have you been influenced by your brother?
He brought back some Kuba cloths back a long time ago when he went off to Europe and Africa, and that they are very minimal color, and the texture is pretty much the piece. But I don't know. I mean, he took my. I applied to the Ontario College of Art at one point, and he took my application and filled it out and went in my place.
Oh my gosh!
When I went off to Queens, but I don't know. I mean, the fact that David can't really see any colors except blue and black. Maybe subconsciously, I've been playing to that, and I didn't even realize it. But
I wonder. Now, David is the one who has a gallery in Toronto.
Yeah, he has the gallery. The David K. Gallery.
What street is it on?
It's on Dover Court at Queen. It's near the it's just gone right out of my mind. The name of the they just refurbished recently.
The one on Dundas? Are you talking about the main art gallery? The AGO?
Well, he was right across from the AGO at the Bougie, and then he moved down to, I guess it's near the Gladstone.
Oh, okay.
And he's right in this new upcoming art district in Toronto. So.
Cool. Let's get his website
it's the David K.
with
Gallery.
An E. Yeah. Okay, so DavidKaye.
Gallery, all one word, yeah.
Gallery.com or
com,
something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So Google David K. Gallery and you'll be able, we hope soon, to be able to see images of some of Leslie's work there. Okay. Let's turn to Lorraine Roy now for a second. So color plays an important part in your work, as I see it.
Mm-hmm. I really love color. I have tried to limit my color choices, and I've always come up adding a little bit more and more and more, and it just I think it's that passion for mixing. It's not just I like color combinations. I color colors by themselves don't interest me that much. It's the combinations. And trying to push beautiful combinations as far as I can is something that keeps me going.
Combinations of color mm-hmm. and of shape?
That comes into play too. But just trying to get the weird pink and the pale brown and the funny purple to work together. Just, you know, that really, if I can do that, it makes my day.
Okay, do you start with a sketch?
Usually I do. I work in two different ways. I do quite a bit of my work based on landscape and escarpment and trees and nature. And those that are more landscape-like are the ones that I do a drawing of. And I usually do a little pencil drawing, very simple sketch before I begin the piece because it gives me the proportions. I want it to look like something. But then I also do abstract work that I might start with a little doodle or an idea in my head, like Leslie said, from a dream or something, and I'll just lay the fabric down and go to it and let things happen right on the fabric. And those two different ways of working really they support each other in a way because I learn new things when I'm doing the abstracts, that things I wouldn't try when I'm doing the landscape pieces, and then I go ahead and try it out in the landscape pieces afterwards. That's kind of how my work grows.
Okay, so you're open to trying different techniques.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I push techniques a little bit, but it's the color combinations and the shapes. I feel about fabric is a little bit like paint. And the technique I use is a lot, the closest thing that you can get with painting, as painting with fabric. So yeah. It's really more about, colors and contrasts more than anything else.
Okay, and Leslie was talking about how the fabric itself, or the piece that she's working with, will tell her what to do with it. Eventually, it sort of directs the work.
Mm-hmm.
In your, and her work is often very, very abstract. Yours is a little more figurative at times, but not always. You also mm-hmm. have some very abstract pieces.
Mm-hmm.
How does inspiration work for you? Is it a piece of fabric you'll see and you'll just think, yeah, or how does it work?
Oh, it works so many different kinds of ways. I always have way, way more ideas than I'll ever use. And sometimes I sketch them down. Sometimes I think I'll remember them and I forget them, which is horrible. You know, I really should carry a pad with me.
Yeah.
Sometimes an ad in a magazine will just, you know, like a few years ago, I was looking through a magazine and there was an ad for a washing machine and there were no washing machines on that ad. It was a tree. It was the most beautiful tree I'd ever seen, at least up until that point. And it inspired a whole group of, like a whole series of pieces came off of that washing machine ad. Oh. So a photography, my science background, all the research that we did in biology at school, everything seems to come into play, and there doesn't seem to be any one thing that I like better than the other. As a matter of fact, the more I work, the more I'm bringing all those things in together at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully successfully.
Oh, very successfully. Very successfully. The work is really gorgeous. Mm. Okay, well, I want to get back to talking about the differences between your two bodies of work and the similarities. But let's take a moment to hear some music, because I always ask my guests to choose a piece of music and we'll play it for you. And we're going to hear your pick first, Lorraine Roy, and you've chosen Elizabeth Shepherd from her CD Heavy Falls the Night. And what is the song that we're going to hear?
Oh, I can't remember the name
of it.
It's
called
now.
What Else?
Oh, What Else,
and
yes.
What Else?
What else could it be?
And why did you choose this song?
Well, actually, I would have chosen any of the tracks on that CD. I think it's a wonderful CD. Elizabeth Shepherd is a Canadian artist, and I just recently discovered her, although she's been around for a little while. I just love the clarity of her voice. I like the jazziness of her music, mm-hmm. and it just kind of so positive. So,
okay.
Especially this piece.
All right. Well, you're listening to Indie 101. You're listening to Art Waves on Indie 101. And I'm Bernadette Rule. And tonight, my guests are Lorraine Roy and Leslie Kay. And you are about to hear Lorraine Roy's music pick, which is Elizabeth Shepherd's What Else?
Tonight and let me create. I'll fix a crack that's in your heart, leaking love away. I'd use my callous hands to carve a boat for all that pain, so you could sail out from the dark and float into the day. I'd hang a million wooden stars all to guide your way, but as the sun's still burning bright, it's killing me to
So that was Elizabeth Shepherd with What Else? And what else can I give you? I don't know, but we are going to ask our guests to give us some more, Lorraine Roy and Leslie Kay. Again, you're listening to Indie 101 tonight, and it's Art Waves with Bernadette Rule. Okay, now, as I said, your work is similar and yet different, both of you. You can look at a large piece of material on the wall with beautiful stitching that makes you just stop and open your mouth, and yet they can be completely different. Lorraine, I notice with your pieces, they will often speak about flowers, tree leaves, buds, roots, etc., while a Leslie Kay piece will often speak to me of the human body, human clothing, vestments I often see in your work. So I want to get both of you to speak to that. Who would like to go first?
Okay.
All right, Lorraine Roy.
We'll go first. Yes, as I mentioned before, I was always, for me, nature was where I wanted to spend my time. I wasn't really much of a people person. I liked animals. I liked plants. I liked being by myself with my dog. And so I think my work evolved in the direction of wanting to show that involvement with nature, how we are associated with nature. And even with my abstracts, they are about chaos and order and cellular division and all that kind of thing, and how orderly cycles are broken by chaos and how that imitates what happens to us in our real life. And I find that's true also, well, everything, the universe, everything works in the same kind of system. Also, though, I have quite a few series of pieces that that are really more about the beauty of nature. Mm-hmm. And I just try to sort of reflect or show what I think is important and beautiful about the things that I see every day. For example, now that I'm living at the top of the escarpment in Greensville near Dundas, I have to go down the escarpment whenever I go into Dundas, and I look at the beautiful rock formations and trees that grow on them as I go down the hill. And how can that not influence my work? I've lived there now for about 5 years, and I still get such a wonderful feeling going down that hill. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago, I decided to do an exhibition based on that and started working in a whole different way with my fabrics. Before, I was using a lot of tiny little bits and putting them underneath netting, which is kind of my signature work. But with this, I started to use actual larger pieces of fabric and stitching them down and letting the fabric speak rather than creating new fabrics all the time. So that was a big jump for me. And actually, that way of working came from working in a more abstract way in another series that I'd done before. So it's all mixed up together. My love of native plants, too. I did an exhibition about 4 years ago based on rare and endangered tree species that grow in the northern Carolinian area, which is where we are now. And not only, I mean, I loved working on the pieces, but I learned so much that it was amazing, and the response was just amazing. People really, I met more tree people that way, more tree people than I did textile people, so that was nice. It was really fun. And these kinds of works helped me, I think they, because I'm kind of a shy person, they bridge a gap. They introduce people to me in a way, and then they know what's important to me, and it helps me relate to them a lot more. So
that's interesting. If you're shy, that showing something that's so personal to you and such a personal expression of yourself helps you with the connecting with other people. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you'd think the opposite,
you
wouldn't
would.
You?
Yeah,
you're putting your heart on your sleeve in the way. Well, mm-hmm. I know every artist is different in that way. Some find it very, very hard to show their work, but I love it. There's nothing I love more than having an exhibition and then going to my own opening. And then just waiting to see what happens. And sometimes I just, you know, sort of hang around incognito and see what people say. And that's, you know, and then they come to me and tell me what they think about how they interpret what I've done in a completely different way than I intended. And that is wonderful, too.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I guess, you know, they say that for shy people, being in drama or something is great. And you would think that would be the opposite. And yet it frees people somehow. So art has a way of freeing us. And it's really neat. We don't think of it that way usually. Mm-hmm. Think of it as the opposite, just sort of really only very confident people would get involved with it, you know.
So right.
It's marvelous. But your work is so vibrant and so botanically beautiful that, you know, I can see how people respond to it really, really well. And this series that you're doing on the escarpment, too, is really amazing. So I would encourage our listeners, since Lorraine Roy does have a great website, to go to her website. You can Google Lorraine Roy and you'll come right to it. But it's L. Roy Textile Art.
Mm.
Not textile artist, textile art.
Textile art. Mm.
Yeah. So definitely should go and see it. Okay, Leslie, when I say that your pieces speak to me of the human body and human clothing and vestments and things like that, what would you have to say to that?
Other people have told me that, too, about some of the pieces, and it surprised me because I think the thing that inspires me most is actually buildings. structural and architectural elements of buildings. I love close-up photos of, you know, like something you sort of you realize after looking at it for a while that that's part of a column of something, mm-hmm. or this is a, where the marble meets the concrete, or you know, those kind of interesting, just the pieces that make up the built landscape, because the other thing I do design is parts of buildings. So, I know that, well, I did do a kimono that was hanging at the McMaster Innovation Park recently, because I just love kimonos. Well, kimonos are very structured in the way they're built.
Yes. They are like buildings in a way. And if you think of geese, too, all the Asian clothing is like that.
And the pieces, the fabric is woven exactly to fit, so there's no waste. So the pieces are all pre-built, like pieces in a building, and then put together in a particularly structured way.
I never thought of that before, but you're absolutely right.
And I don't know. A couple of pieces, people said, one piece I did is actually called, it was actually inspired by 9/11, two towers falling away from each other with texture around them. It's more controlled looking than 9/11 looked, but that piece just happened. I was listening to Bruce Springsteen and that piece just came together, and then later when I hung it, somebody said, "Oh, that looks like a corset," and I'm going, okay, hadn't thought of that. But
When you take on a subject like 9/11, or Lorraine, when you take on a subject like the escarpment, you know, something that we feel so powerfully within us, you know, do you have an emotion that you're going for when people look at the piece? Let's take the 9/11 one.
I don't know if, you know, for me it was 9/11. For other people obviously saw it differently. For me, the whole point, the thing about art is I want people to look. Just go out and look. I hope that after they've been to anything, any art show, or seen photographs or things, you go and you actually, your sense of sight is vastly increased.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really care what I thought it started out to be, as long as when people look at it, it makes them look at other things more. So, and I do, because I work in black, I do like changing people's attitude towards black. I was standing beside somebody in front of one of my pieces in the Carnegie in Dundas, and she said, somebody said there were these black pieces here. And I thought, oh, that's so depressing. But now I'm looking at it, I think, this isn't depressing at all. This is just so uplifting. And I think, well, good. So
it is true. You would think that black on black art would be a downer, but it isn't at all. It's as you say, quite rich.
Yeah.
You bring out the richness of black.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the escarpment pieces that you're doing. Is there a particular emotion that you want to bring out, Lorraine Roy?
That's a good question. Well, obviously, I feel an emotion when I'm making my work, and I find that I try to make the pieces feel and look the way I feel inside. As for aiming for someone else's interpretation, I can't do that. I mean, it's like me talking to you and expecting you to feel a certain way. They're really more like conversations. I like to say one thing, and then when someone looks at the work, they're saying another thing. They're putting themselves into it, and they're going to bring all their own experiences into how they look at my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will interpret it in different ways. And I've been really surprised sometimes what people see in the shapes of the works that I do, or in the feelings that they have. And then other times I haven't been surprised, because that was how I felt myself. So, but I like when both things happen, because that's, you know, I mean, that's relating to people, and that's letting them have a say in what they're looking at. They're mm-hmm. half of the equation, really. Mm-hmm. I do what I have to do, and then they do what they have to do when they're looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any artist, I guess, would say the same thing. Okay, let's get back to the tradition from which this kind of work springs, the art of sewing and quilting and so on. You're basically standing on the shoulders of great fabric artists of the past who have done very practical work with their art. Have you ever heard of the Tutwiler Quilters of Mississippi? Do you know their work?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, amazing sort of geographical, or not geographical, wrong word, geometrical shapes and designs that they use. This is a community of black women in Mississippi who just have been making their quilts. Their mothers taught them how, their grandmothers, forever. And some outsiders came in and just looked at what they were doing and were amazed. They weren't doing the usual log cabin or star or wedding ring patterns that you see on quilts. They were doing their own thing and very free form work and so interesting. And this is what I find exciting, to see that these very practical ancient arts are moving into the realm of fine art. And you two are very much on the forefront, I think, of bringing these the possibilities out. Do you both sew your own clothes at this point? Do you do practical things with your needles?
Well, I dropped sewing a long time ago for the reasons that I the picture in my head was always much, much better than anything I could end up sewing.
Okay.
They ended up looking better on the hanger than they did on me. Sewing is, okay, I'm going to say it's hard. It's working in three dimensions. And I think you mentioned something about three dimensions before. I'm a 2D person.
Okay.
And so I don't sew anymore, no.
Okay. Do you, Leslie?
I still sew some of the time. Especially at Christmas, I'm the aunt who makes the pajamas for my nieces every year. The teacher of one of my young nieces had asked her, "What's a Christmas tradition?" And she says, "Your aunt makes you pajamas." So I have to
That's
do
cute.
It.
Yeah.
But I still knit. I doodle with knitting, but I do knit practical things.
Mm-hmm.
I find knitting quite painful because I injured my shoulder installing a skylight one time. I like lace knitting. I love...
Do you mean tatting?
No, it's knitting. You learn how to create holes in knitting with, it's called a yarn over. You essentially drop a stitch and then increase to cover it, and Barbara Walker has encyclopedias of all these fabulous stitches that you can do. And it's lace. You're knitting lace, and I love knitting lace.
Oh, interesting.
I'll
have to look this up.
Yeah.
Knitting. So if we Google Barbara Walker?
You should. She is dead now, but her books were revived by people who were keen on it. And so you can still find these encyclopedic books of... Mm-hmm. All sorts of, and I'm not just lace knitting, but Aran and crossover stitching, stitches that look like weaving. It's textures, again, wonderful textures with yarns, twills, and almost
wonderful.
Anything. But yeah.
Sounds very neat. Do either of you ever collaborate on a piece of work?
I'm trying to remember. I've done a few projects like that before, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's challenging, but it's always lots of fun too. Yes.
And satisfying ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever, Leslie?
No, I don't collaborate, and I don't usually work to a theme. So, and a collaboration would involve a theme.
Oh, that's right, because you have to know what you're doing before you start.
Yeah. You have to know what the other person is doing, too.
Yeah, yes.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Okay, how long would you typically spend on a piece of work, either one of you?
Oh,
hard question, because I'm sure it varies.
I get asked that a lot, I'm sure. Yeah, the people who are listening to this are laughing, because it's a question that I always take a long time to answer, and I hope people will just sort of understand. The time that it takes to work on the piece itself is just the tip of the iceberg. There's the collection of the fabric, there's the designing, there's all the years that I spent learning the techniques, because before I was doing what I'm doing now, I was doing lots of other things. What it took to bring to the designing, that's what takes all the time. The actual work on the piece, yes, they're time-consuming, I have to say, but I've never measured the hours, and it's irrelevant, and I don't even think about it when I'm working on my pieces. Some go really quickly, some go really, really slowly, mm-hmm. And so I'd rather not think about that as part of the value of a piece. So yeah. That's kind of how I look at that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I know when you're working on something that you're very passionate about, it the time just doesn't have any meaning at all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say to that, Leslie?
Do you know? It varies, because I do pieces that are so varied in size. I really have no idea how long it takes. The big pieces in the Italian quilting, the trapunto, that can take months.
What does trapunto mean exactly?
I have no idea.
Do you know, my mother used to talk about her pink silk trapunto quilt that she got for a wedding present, and it was long gone by the time I came along. And I always wondered, what is trapunto?
It is a stuffed technique. So you have the two layers that are stitched together in some shape, and then in classic trapunto, the back of the thing would the lower fabric would be slit, and they would stuff it with something.
I see.
And to give you the bas relief. For me, I'm pulling the yarn from one end of a set of stitches through to the other to create long channels that will shape the work.
I cannot believe you do these things without having to. I remember once losing the string in a pair of pajamas and having to try to get the thing back through the waistline.
Yeah, I found the safest way was to double the yarn over and pull it from one end to the other really carefully, because you don't want it to break.
No.
So that you couldn't lose the yarn off the needle, because it's in the loop. So.
You could just cry.
Yeah, every once in a while it does break. And so you go, okay, you pull it all back out and you start again.
I'm just in awe. I think you both must have so much patience. It's incredible. Again, this is Art Waves on Indie 101. And tonight my guests are Lorraine Roy and Leslie Kay, fabric artists. I want to ask this question so that our listeners, if they would be interested in something, can contact you. Do you ever work on commission according to somebody's request for a portrait or a portrait of a tree in their yard or a portrait of their house or anything like that?
Well, I've been lucky enough to have a few commissions where I've been told, you just go ahead and do whatever you want, or they give me a title or something like that. But I do then do a drawing so that they can see what they'll end up with. I recently finished a really large commission. It was for a spa in Washington State. Piece ended up being about 14 feet wide and about 48 inches high at different spots. And then looks like a large wave as part of the spa.
Mm.
And that was a wonderful project. And then I've done another piece that was that fitted perfectly in the peaked roof over a fireplace in an architect's home. So nice. I love doing commissions. I don't get very many, which is good, because usually they end up being big, and I like doing other things too. But yes.
But you're willing to do them.
Yeah, I'm willing. Yeah, I do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that was Lorraine Roy speaking. So can you just tell people again how they can find you if they're interested in commissioning a piece?
Well, you can just Google my name and put textile next to it, and I'll probably come up.
you do come up. I can
yes.
attest to that.
Yes,
and,
I
and
do.
There's a way to email you or contact you.
Yes,
on,
I do have a website, yes.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Now, Leslie, do you ever do work on commission?
The closest thing would be the pieces I've done for the Design Hope fundraiser.
Oh, right. Where You've both done pieces for Design Hope, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, because you basically, I mean, they tossed out the idea it has to do with something about housing and having a home. And so you can, everybody just sort of goes off from there.
Right.
But I don't think I could do a piece that was somebody else's idea.
Yeah, not with the way you work. I suppose it wouldn't really work out for you. Okay, well, fair enough. So so we don't have to try and get your coordinates. But let's talk again about where people can see your work. We're coming to the end of the hour, so I need to just sort of establish where people can see your work. So, Lorraine Roy?
I do show my work right from my studio on Hillcrest Avenue in Dundas. But also, if you're in Toronto, I'm at Petroff Gallery in the Guild Shop. In Stratford, I'm at Davis Canadian Arts, Circle Arts in Tobermory, and, of course, Carnegie Gallery in Dundas.
All right. Good old Carnegie Gallery. Okay, thank you. And upcoming this summer, the Toronto...
The Toronto Outdoor Show,
And Nathan Phillips
also
Square.
At Nathan Phillips Square, yes, which will be
July 9th to the 11th.
Oh, thank you. And then also the Dundas Studio Tour, which is October 2nd and 3rd, or 1st and 2nd, one of those weekends.
Okay, great. Thanks, Lorraine Roy. And Leslie Kay?
My work is primarily carried through my brother's gallery in Toronto, the David Kay Gallery.
Okay.
And I have shown at the Transit Gallery on Lock Street.
All right.
But I have to start rebuilding my work. I've been kind of on hiatus doing more design on paper for people. So,
okay.
And also designing buildings. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah. But you do have things right now at the McMaster Innovation Park.
I have a piece at the McMaster Innovation Park. It's the first of my. It's a more traditional style quilt than I usually do. And my first black quilt.
Very interesting. I have to get over and see that. And that's on Longwood?
Longwood, right? Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, well, I want to thank you both for being on the program. It's been really a wonderfully interesting program about fabric art and fiber art. we're going to finish the program with Leslie Kay's music choice, which is Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb. You want to tell us why you chose that?
I think because it has David Gilmour playing the guitar, and I think it's the best guitar solo in rock history.
All right, well, let's go ahead and try and get it on quickly so that people will have a chance to hear that. But again, thank you both very, very much for being on the program. It's been wonderful.
You're welcome, Bernadette.
Next week, my guest on Art Waves will be Celtic poet Jim Lafferty, and I hope you'll all join us then at our new time slot, 7 to 8, which obviously, if you're listening to this, you know about. So 7 to 8 on Indie 101, Art Waves every Sunday night. Next week, Jim Lafferty, Celtic poet. And until then, this is Bernadette Rule wishing you a good night on the shores of Lake Ontario.